Today is February 23rd, Monday, 2026, and we have an amazing teleclass presenter and presentation in store. If I've read everything that I gathered about Lola, we wouldn't have time for the presentation, so I'm going to shorten it a lot. Lola's an MCC and ex-MANC.
Recording in progress.
Oh, you're back up. Yes, thank you. Huns and Barrister, Lincoln's Inn, UK. Actually, she was, or maybe still is, a, what is it, barrister? What is the word? You were in the legal field. You started, yeah, in judiciary, and you retired as a senior magistrate after 10 years. Wow. Master's degree in consulting and coaching for change, distinction, on and on. I would be delinquent if I didn't put the words ethics and Lola in the same sentence. Her impressive amount of experience and contribution to the field, from being in the IRB, Independent Review Board, to being on the code review team. We shared that experience. You're now the co-host of the assessors.
Yes, I'm co-leading the assessors.
Yeah, it just goes on and on. This lady is just service and wonderful. Global executive coach since 2009. Team coaching, managerial coaching in organizations. You were a leadership training specialist for 16 years in New York City. That was before you left from Hong Kong, where I met you, right?
Well, I've been working around the world. I was working in New York as well.
Ah, okay.
But I was actually residing in Hong Kong then. New York's only been 3 years.
Ah, okay. As I said, I would take a whole day to figure out everything you've done. You work in Europe, Asia, U.S., and right now we want you to work right here now and tell us and share with us how to enrich team coaching with systems psychodynamic lenses. We've never had a presentation on this, so let's go. Thank you for being here, Lola. You're on.
Thank you very much, Terry. And I'll say good morning, good afternoon, because I think you're from all the parts of the world. Right now I'm home. I went to celebrate my mother's 80th in Mauritius. So it's 9 o'clock at night for us. And I also told Terry that Wi-Fi is very tentative here. I hope everything's going to be fine. And also tell all of you that from time to time you'll see me turning and playing with the switch. I mean, my mother's old house, so the air condition is not working that great. But I think we can deal with that right now.
Of course.
It gets very warm from time to time. So thank you, everyone, for being here. And thank you, Terry, for such a very kind very kind introduction to for me. I'll start by sharing the cover of a PowerPoint, and the picture really depicts what we want to speak about today. So my specialization is really around psychodynamics, team, individuals, and groups. And today it's going to be not a full course on psychodynamics, but how certain aspects of psychodynamics can be added to our repertoire as coaches. And I'm happy to send you the PDF of my slides. I'll send them to Terry later on. And as you can see, it is an iceberg. And you know what? I've just realized, speaking French for 2 weeks, I'm now missing words in English, and I'm thinking in French again. Yes, the pleasure of being bilingual. So it's really about looking at personality and understanding personality. So Terry earlier on said that I won't go into my bio again, that I, after the judiciary, actually I became a volunteer with refugees for 6.5 years, part-time, and that's really where I'm committed to. And I went to INSEAD Business School and did a master's, which involved organizational system psychodynamics and individual team group coaching. And this is where I was introduced to psychodynamics, and I went there for a reason. It's because when I was working with coaching the kids in the refugee camps, I saw that, you know, there were things that I was missing, because we all know that as coaches, when we work, the starting point is starting where the client is at, and the richer, the more granular the understanding of our clients, the better we can help the client. I wouldn't like to use the word help, but support the client in the journey towards where they want to be. So understanding, contextual understanding, is so important. We all know that. And that's why I went to study, actually, psychodynamics. It triggered my interest because I realized that it was limitations. So if we look at what at coaching, I used here an iceberg because there's so much more under the iceberg that is there than what we see with our eyes. And it's really like this that I see clients. And if you look at this, it's to think of all of us, we want to enrich our lenses when we are speaking to our clients. We really want to enrich our lenses. Some of us use TA, transactional analysis, others use the Johari window, we use frameworks, even the GROW model, into leading the client. But understanding is so fundamental to what we do, understanding the context of a client. And what I hope to be doing today, and I hope you do stop me and ask me questions, is to have clarity on what is systems psychodynamics coaching, learning some of the concepts. Hopefully I will interest you to go and look deeper into them, and then getting introduced to the ethical boundaries, because ethics is central to my practice. And I have to say, this came more from my legal background than being a coach. When I became a coach, I took the legal background and the ethics with it. And I think it's important to always speak about ethics, because I truly believe that there is no coaching without ethics. There is no sustainable coaching, because this is what actually brings trust in relationships as well. Psychological safety. So let's go to some questions to you. Is there anybody who's a psychodynamic coach on the call today? Okay, I'm trying to look at everyone. Okay, then please do ask me questions, and I'll be the only one answering to you. Let's start with have you ever had a slip of the tongue where you said things that you weren't meant to say, or you had an expression yourself which shocked you? Just raise your hand if you did. It's happened to me, right? Have you seen perfectly healthy team members behave in sometimes ways we cannot comprehend, and we do not understand where it's coming from? Whether we're on coaching or in real life, seen team members completely rely on their leader, although senior, focus exclusively on execution, right? They just rely on the leader. Even though the leader, you know, shows frustration, they just want to execute. They don't want to go deeper into anything like cohesion or working on how the group works together. Or teams who work in silos, and basically, and I think for people who do a lot of team coaching like me, we see that quite often, even around the world, where they seem to be working like in their little small little container with almost a limited view of what is the common mission driving everyone, especially in these large corporations. But sometimes, even in small and medium-sized corporations, have unexpressed feelings drive your behavior at work? I have. And sometimes it's not very, we don't really understand, or sometimes we understand it, but we don't express these feelings. Seeing cases where the complexity of a task triggers seemingly irrational irrational reactions from team members. You know, no, I don't want to do that. You're just changing everything. They don't even want to hear about the change. And that's why 70% of change initiatives fail as well. We know from the beginning people can show a lot of resistance. There are other things, but very often it is resistance as well. And are we always, even us as coaches, are we always able to locate the source of our emotional reactions? If we sit down, we reflect, and we try to make sense of it. But sometimes we can also feel we're missing something here. I don't understand why this is still, hitting us now. And if you think about it, think about what we've learned. Thought, the triangle, thought, feelings, impact behavior. Very important. And now think of it. If we were able to have a methodology, that would make us go to the source, the trigger for the slip of the tongue, the trigger for the incomprehensible behavior, the trigger, basically the source of the unexpressed and misunderstood feeling, it would give us the ability, a greater choice, to allow the person to choose whether they want to work on it, right? Whether it's for us or for other people. And here we're really speaking about a team. Anybody has questions at this stage? No questions? Okay. So if we think of teams, they are part of a network of relationships. There is no team if there is no network of relationship, and there's a whole system, right, within which a team operates. Even if there are, you know, three people, and we look at what, usually it's like six, eight people, but sometimes a team can also be 20 people. It's a network of relationship. And there's always a larger team, a unit, a function, right? Somebody wrote something here. And there are patterns of interactions, and psychodynamics looks at these patterns of interactions and seeks to make people understand, bring them to the light to create more understanding. So the wider organizational system is a vital aspect of team coaching as it impacts behaviors. And think about it, not in terms also, it can be a family system, but it can also be even a whole country, right? How countries relate to each other as well. Because we, as human beings, we are representatives of this whole home, which is there. So the team coach, psychodynamic, is a participant and observer, which is very different if we're doing ICF coaching and we're really standing away. We're also sharing our feelings, our observation, what's going on in us when we're looking at the team. And of course, there is risk-taking as well, because this can trigger a reaction from the team. And we all know about scapegoating. When things get too difficult to handle, we find a convenient scapegoat, somebody who holds 100% of the blame. And by the way, in real life, is there a group or a person who can hold 100% of the blame? It's impossible. It's impossible, because that's not who we are as human. We come in all shapes, and nobody, no single group can hold 100% of the blame. So we are going to look at how we want to see how individuals impact group and institutions and vice versa, and also sometimes leaders, right? Often leaders, by the way. So let's look at this. I loved this quote by Martin Luther King, because I think it explains a lot what's happening also today in the world. He said, "We are tied together in the single garment of destiny, caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. And what affects one directly affects all indirectly. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And that's so resonant with coaching. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. And that's really what coaching says. It's also very resonant of how the culture I was born in looks at life as well, that it's really a circle. Everything we do comes back to us, right? Everything we do, there's no escaping, because whatever we've done, there's a lesson afterwards which come to teach us something. And if we look at what Martin Luther King says, for you, and I'd like you to unmute yourself, where do you see what I have spoken about here, about psychodynamics? I know it's been very limited what I said to you about psychodynamics, looking at the undercurrent, the dynamics of that of what happens. So what is actually going through your mind when you read this? Or can you actually make a link to what I'm going to be speaking about with open systems and the psychodynamic approach? I'm sorry, I'll have to switch on my air conditioner again.
Okay.
The joys of being Mauritius.
I'm thinking about the associate. For me, the first thing in my mind, since I don't do team coaching, is I think about our association, the ICF. Yeah. And I am just like, oh yeah, I've got something to learn.
Yes, and it's also the mutuality. We all impact each other. We cannot say that something is happening in our own backyard, or we see something on TV and we think, oh, this belongs to others, it doesn't belong to me. By turning our back, it also prevents us from being the best person we can be, because it's calling us to action. And that's the principle of mutuality. Nahum raised his hand.
Yes, you are asking about whether we can relate to it. So strangely enough, my what's the name? My raison d'être, my destiny, how do we call that?
Purpose.
I just forgot it.
Purpose.
No, my life purpose. Thank you very much. My life purpose has three parts, and part two cannot be done without me doing part one. So I can relate to that very much. Thank you.
That's a fantastic input, Nahum, because what you said is also with this mutuality, it's also within the person, it's not just within the system. And part of psychodynamics is also the part of understanding how is it that our early experiences shaped us, and to stop and say, should I be shaped by it, or do I have a choice of today to make better choices because the context has changed? It's also understanding our patterns. We are shaped by society. We are shaped by people. We are shaped by what we hear, right? Okay, there's Natalia and Jerry as well. I don't know who, I apologize. Whoever raised their hands first, please go ahead. Yes.
I think this is related to what Nahum said, but I can find a concept also in the system called Jerry, which is myself as a system of many different parts together. And when something works, all the rest works. When something doesn't, is stimulating the other parts to do something to make everything work better.
Absolutely, it's from within. This is the intrapersonal, and then we talk of the team with the interpersonal, and then even larger to the community and even to a whole country. And here he was speaking about the mutuality of different races being together, but this could be extrapolated, and this extrapolated to any groups. And basically, in the simplest way, it basically says that we are so connected that we cannot treat each other badly and hope that we're going to be fine. It's not possible. And of course, we don't live in, you know, on another planet. We live in a world with lots of difficulties. So it's about how we have the courage to take the step towards this equity. And yes, Natalia, I forgot about you. Sorry.
I'm okay. The first thing that happens to me, Lola, when I read this was like transformation happens in relationship.
Yeah.
And not in isolation.
Yeah. Yes, but it's also relationship with the self as well.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. Growth happens in relationship. I agree with you. But it starts with the self. And sometimes it's like what Nahum said. He didn't say making peace. He said the connection between who he was before for the second part. It's within, right?
Yeah, and regarding with co-creation.
Absolutely. With co-creation. Yeah. Well, but it starts here, interpersonal,
yeah.
And then it extends to the whole world. So let's look at, you know, the best way, I think, to look at psychodynamics of a team is to think of what you look at. What do you see when you look at a playground of children? What do you see when you just think when you used to go to a playground? But as an adult, when you took your children, your nephew, your niece, I hope everybody's seen a playground and took the time and the pleasure to absorb and see the kids. And by the way, I'll have to plug my computer again, or else I'm going to run out. Sorry. So take the time and start telling me, and don't worry about me moving around.
Sorry about this.
Okay.
That's gone.
Well, I can't find the plug. It's gone. I'll find it afterwards. Sorry about this, guys. So what do you notice when you look at a playground of children? Is everybody playing
Dahlia?
This computer?
Dahlia has her hand up.
Please just speak.
Yeah. What I see is sometimes it's about, first of all, playing and laughing and not paying attention very much. I mean, there is relationships between one and another, but they are more concentrated on themselves and they are doing whatever they want. They are not abide by norms or by other rules or something. They are just themselves.
So what you're describing is a team which is highly functioning. And Lord, would you like to say something?
Well, the word that came to me was like, it looks chaotic, but there is some kind of harmony inside. Mm-hmm. Like self-organization or something like that.
So there's chaos. Chaotic, but there is some kind of order. So
yes.
You're absolutely right. But if we keep looking at kids playing, and I mean, I spent years because I took time off, and I was alone with my daughter in Paris, so I was always, every day. What you see is friends who work together, friends who welcome each other. And then you also see kids who are on the sideline. Some kind of kids who are not invited to play. You also see that. So there are all kinds of dynamics. And it's actually almost the same that gets mirrored in a team. Some get along extremely well, they together. Sometimes have you seen a team where there's like a bossy little boy or girl who's actually telling everybody what to do and everybody kind of follows suit? Have you seen people who said, well, he's not our friend. She is not, they're not our friends. So we go and play in another corner. They are little humans. They are all these feelings of grouping together, right? And this is what we observe. We observe how people are working well together, so sharing, just contributing like you've described, but also how they may not be doing so. And this is when the team needs the coach even more. So if you look at it, team psychodynamic theory, it's in order to keep disturbing emotions at bay and out of awareness, individual and teams enact a range of defense mechanisms that help us avoid unwanted thoughts and feelings. The biggest one is repression. So a lot of time you see great devastation, but you see kids smiling and playing. And they may have empty bellies, but they are still playing, they are still smiling. And that's repression, because their little brains, and us, we do that as human, cannot hold, you know, what's happening. And that's the mechanism to survival, to manage the anxiety, is to repress. Repression is the most used defense mechanism. Think of all of us, the bad experiences that we had. All of us, I mean, I'll be the first to raise my hand here, that we've had, I would hope just one or none, but we may have had a few, if we're unlucky, a few experiences that we want to put out of our mind. We don't even want to think about it. Yeah? Does that speak to you? And that's called repression. It's because we are uncomfortable in dealing with it, we put it away. There's also avoidance. Avoidance is we see something, we feel terrible, or we feel very complex about it, but it's easier to avoid the issue because it helps us to move on, not to deal with it. Those unconscious processes, however, the news is that it affects us. It stays in our system. There is no experience, nothing we see that we're trying to repress, we're trying to avoid. We're projecting on somebody else and saying, oh, they are like that. Like a whole group is like that, right? It affects us. It may be out of our conscious processes, but it stays in our unconscious processes and shows up in our behavior. And that's what I read when I saw in Martin Luther King's quote, the mutuality of behavior. It's not just, I'm okay, you're not okay. It's like, if I not okay, you also cannot be okay, right? Because you are not dealing with me. You're moving away, you're trying to basically avoid the subject, but your reaction will also be completely, you would have missed something, a growth, a development that was needed because you didn't deal with that situation. Am I making sense right now? Yes? If I'm not making sense, please let me know. So whatever happens to us goes into our unconscious processes. And that's what we do as a psychodynamic coach. And here I'm talking about team coaching, right? So let's look at the difference between conscious processes and unconscious processes. Conscious processes runs 24/7. Well, when we are awake, when we are sleeping, it doesn't run. It's our dreams. Our dreams are our unconscious processes. You know, it's all during the day we know what we're doing, but unconscious is at work 24/7. When we think we know what we are doing, there are also unconscious processes at work, and we were asleep, certainly. Haven't you sometimes gone into a place, intensely liked someone, that afterwards you found this person most unlikable? Or intensely disliked someone that you found really lovely afterwards? So these are the unconscious processes at play. Everything we do has a reason. As long as somebody is not crazy, what they do, there is a reason for their behavior. And it's that reason that we seek to bring to light. So that once this reason is brought to light, the person can make a conscious choice, right? Doesn't mean they will do it, but they can make a conscious choice. So conscious is when it runs when we are awake. It's we see it when we are focusing on a few specific things. But sometimes, haven't you driven and gotten home and said, how did I arrive home? I didn't see anything on the road, yet I had no accident. This was the unconscious processes also. They know the road, they take you home. Unconsciously, in the beginning when we drive, we're very conscious, especially before there was automatic drive, about, you know, the throttle and the pedals. And then, after sometimes, it's embedded into our unconscious. We drive without even thinking about it. So, but conscious uses reason, logic. Unconscious uses simultaneously process wide range of information. Sometimes we walk into a place and we feel danger, right? We feel danger, we feel uncomfortable. And by the way, there are soldiers in the US Army, and there's a big investment I saw on this in studying intuition. Some soldiers are able to walk into a place and without smelling anything, they can actually say there's going to be a detonation here. Let's all get out of here, because they've been able to scan the environment, right? So it's that processing of a wide range of information. Conscious, there's voluntary controlled. We are controlled by the automatic processes. However, we are controlled by the automatic processes of our unconscious mind. This is what most of us don't realize. And if we look at it, have you read the book of David Eagleman? I would say please read it. I bought it, I think, around probably 7 years ago when it first came out. And it basically says that 95% of our behavior is rooted in unconscious premises. It's not things that we have considered on our own and that we have in a neutral and objective manner weighed. It's all we've heard, right? And imagine now with social media, how this plays on us. Any questions? Because I can see only part of a room. And if you think I'm not responding to you, just kind of unmute yourself and speak, right?
Well, can you mention the name of the book again? Sounds really interesting.
It's by, I can remember, David Eagleman, Incognito. It's absolutely, it's mind-blowing, because I was teaching, I still teach brain science and coaching. With psychodynamics, you have to look at brain science, and psychodynamics is supported by brain science. For those of you who use psychodynamics and brain science and coaching, you know that we create neural paths, right? By what we think we do, and these neural paths, they are out of awareness, but they're very thick and strong by the repeated behaviors, right? Yes, Terry.
Are
please.
You making a distinction between unconscious and subconscious? Because I'm confused on that one here.
I'm
You're using unconscious.
I'm going to go, I did conscious, unconscious. And now I'm going to do subconscious as well and use personality theory.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Terry. So when we go to, you know, the psychodynamic theory, there are some basic principles like unconscious motives affect our behavior, right? As adults, our feeling and behavior are rooted in our childhood experiences, what we heard, what how we experience people, how our early people who looked after us, they really shape us in one way, or sometimes we rebel in another as well, right? We push back. Then what we hope to do is that when we become adult and we have a different situation, is that we consider all this and we say, you know, which one shall we keep? Which one shall we let go of? Which ones are hurting us today, right? We're not vulnerable little people anymore. Even the most abnormal behavior has a cause. If a person is not crazy, there is a reason behind their behavior. And if we want to change it, we have to have the courage to look at the reason. That's the only way we can change. Feelings and behavior on theirs are not to be blamed, but understood. For a psychodynamic coach, right? I wouldn't say that if I was in the judiciary. So our early relationships, you know, like we said, they really shape who we are. The conscious part of a mind, according to personality theory, which is by Sigmund Freud, is the ego, and the unconscious mind is the ID and the superego, right? They are often in conflict. And when they are in conflict, this is when people actually resort to defense mechanisms. We all have defense mechanisms, including me, right? And I know them. And I, even though I know them, they are automatisms. It's only if I pull back, I can control them. Humans have innate drives that others either fulfill or frustrate. And that's why even the best relationship, wonderful at the start, but also depends how these two people are going to negotiate the things they don't agree on. And this is when we really see how, whether we really fit together or not. Groups and teams, like even, you know, couples, can be a source of fulfillment or frustration overall. And leadership can either be a product or casualty of teams or groups. So they are the basic principles. And this is what exactly you were saying about the subconscious and the preconscious. And this is the theory of Sigmund Freud, personality theory. All of us have the id. So according to Freud, also, although I think sometimes it's not so unconscious, the id is the part of the psyche that reacts to our basic needs, desires, and urges. And this is when you see people regress. Haven't we seen these people who regress and scream and behave like children, like toddlers? We've done it ourselves, right? And this is the id which is at play. And children who are very loved, we see their id. They have had never no boundaries, and they keep pushing these boundaries. And that's why we say the terrible twos, when they start speaking and they want to be the bosses. And you know, for some of them, I'd say they almost never get out of this. If we don't have boundaries, how do we grow? How do we become better if we don't have challenges, if nobody really puts the boundaries in place? And then there is the superego. The superego exists to control the id's impulses. This is what, for example, when mothers say, oh, it's not nice to do so, that you're going to hurt other people to the child, what are other people are going to say? Or when we are shunned, as a team, as an individual, or as a people. So these are things that we learn, that we need to reconsider, right? So it's a behavior. Then it's really our view of our ideal self, how we ought to be. Each and every one of us, as coaches, I'm sure, we thought, what are the things that makes me love this woman or this man in the mirror? What are the things that I don't like about this man or this woman in the mirror? Because it's really the man or the woman in the mirror who's our greatest judge. This is who we live with. And these are important conversations to have. And who we love, that person we look up to, is really the superego. Then the ego. It's not the same ego that we talk about, the ego which is the arrogance of someone, right? Here, the ego that Freud described is that part of the psyche that mediates between the id, which is driven by urges, by I want, and then the superego, driven by, as a human being, what is the right thing to do? The moral concerns. As a human being, what do I stand for? It's us devoid of a group. It's us human to human, right? And there, the ego is constantly, we call them the executive. They are going back and forth, and that's tiring. And if the ego fails to use realistic thinking and keeps listening to what pleases them, then it fails. It results in anxiety, and the ego resorts to defense mechanism to prevent them from facing the reality of a situation. It can be regression, it can be avoidance, it can be scapegoating, it can be putting all the blame on one group and saying we are all absolutely fine. To be human, all of us here, no, we've never been 100% right. So there is no group which is 100% right. There is no larger group that can be 100% right. And what happens is that for us to really be able to bring balance, it takes individuals to show up. It takes individuals to ask themselves the hard questions, right? So this is what I think, when I read this, for me, it's probably the, me personally, it's the most important theory about human behavior and also human growth. It's understanding the three parts of this. Where is my ego? Where is it that my ego is working? Where is my superego? And where is my id? How can I create balance instead of resorting to defense mechanism? I'm going to look at time because I don't want to go. Defense mechanism, there's also sublimation. You know, we make something very nice. We kind of say, oh, it's so wonderful, right? There's also compensation. There's also dissociation. That's really trauma. And I talked about dissociation of children. When they are facing traumatic situations, they just want to resort to and say, oh, let's go and play, because I don't want to remember to this horrendous. I used to be in the judiciary, and I saw this so often. And it was just, you know, when they were assaulted or things like this, it was just, I want to get away from it. Let me go to do the things. We can also resort to withdrawal. Somebody who has very violent urges can actually take up something which is positive. Let me go and do boxing so that I take it out without hurting anyone, right? So there are several defense mechanisms, and I would strongly advise you to read on defense mechanism. But here, because we're speaking about team, let's speak about groups and their defense mechanisms, and you will recognize them. There are social defense mechanisms, and basically it's the collective of a mechanism. And individuals use a range of tactics, but societies and groups also use a range of tactics. And if you think about it here, I would be really remiss if I didn't speak to you about, so these are the dysfunctions that we see in organizations, right? And even at national level or international level, we see that in all countries, right? So silos, scapegoating, blame, I'm great, you are all bad. When you hear that, you know it's not reality. As coaches, we know that nobody is 100% fine. We need to go and find out to create balance. We need to be able to not resort to avoidance, repression, or just, you know, complete blindness to what we are seeing. Taboo behaviors. Oh, you shouldn't do that in front of this person. Women should wear high heels. There was this as well in some consultancies, right? Gossip and rumors, conspiracy theories. Oh, we know this is what happened, you know, without any proof. So with this, we know, when we hear this, we know it's basically social defense mechanisms at work. I would be remiss not to speak about Wilfred Bion. I studied him intensively in 1942, during the Second World War, when the upper classes were completely, was it from 1942? Yeah, after the war, the completely decimated. All the princes were dead, the kings, the counts of England were decimated. Suddenly, Britain realized, well, who's going to lead our army? And lo and behold, the Wehrmacht invaded the British Isles, right? So they knew they were in trouble, and they bought. There was the need for a psychologist who was a free thinker, who wanted to look at things without being attached to the usual way of doing. And they brought Wilfred Bion to reinvent the British Army. How to evaluate a man without looking at his birthright and his legacy or his title. And he did this amazing work of looking at teens, how to evaluate a person who can overcome his own inner conflicts, who can steer the course as a leader without being completely overwhelmed by the fears of everyone around them or the desires for success of other men. And Wilfred Bion found that there was work groups are what we talk, cats and birds, the ideal teams, focused, and I won't talk about this, you know, a common approach, a common goal, maximum of eight people in the team, complete communication, psychological safety, the ability to absolutely question each other. Then there are the basic assumption groups. And these groups are the groups with the cell, with the defense mechanisms. And you will see it by listening to the news, international news, when people speak, focused on self-preservation, a tendency to blame individuals, subgroups, or other teams. Effort is focused on maintaining the group, no effort to make it worthwhile for everyone. The team shares unspoken and unconscious assumptions about the team. They don't talk about who they are really. They are really defense mechanisms against feelings and thoughts that, if raised, would derail the whole group, the usual way of living, because it takes courage to get to a work group status. These activities divert the group from the primary task, which is performance and growth. And if we look at basic assumptions, there are several ones. Dependence. We all depend on the leader. We won't move until the leader tells us what to do. Fight or flight. Fight is, I don't believe in anyone. I move away. I blame everything. I break everything in the group. Flight is the conventional group. I will go with what we've done. I want the safe. I want the tried. Pairing. We think that there is one messiah which is going to, and we see that, that's going to liberate them, us, from all the ills that we consider, or a pair of people or a group of people that, if they come, would be truly perfect, have no fault whatsoever, and then we will look at them and say, oh no, you are doing wonderful, right? Annihilation is self-destruction. Yeah, I need to destroy myself and just follow the crowd for me to be a person. Oneness, looking out. You know, all of us have been together. If we don't think, all think the same, everything is going to be destroyed. Meanness, let me survive first, right? Let me look out for myself. So if we think about all these defense mechanisms, we see them and they distract people from the primary task, which is basically what was the group supposed to do. So we have 52, that's not good. We have ethical considerations, confidentiality. I will never tell me about your childhood. I will ask the question, where else have you seen yourself? Who else in your environment from before or now have you seen behave or think like that? So I would never go and dig in the past. The past is here to inform the present and have the person have a brighter future. Boundaries. The coach offers hypothesis without imposing. There's the competence to deal with intense emotions, and that's why psychodynamics is not taught as a course, it's taught as a degree. It took 18 months of training for me to become a psychodynamic coach, and I did a master's degree. Competence to recognize psychological distress, awareness around our own biases when we start feeling strongly. Our job is not to feel strongly, it's to understand as a coach. Then transference and counter-transference. Transference is when, for example, we're coaching someone and suddenly that person is speaking about something, and the transference is when they start treating us like their mothers or fathers, benevolent dictators. Tell me what to do, I trust you. And we feel so great, and there's counter-transference. We start dealing with them as their parents. And we see that also, and more, I think, less now, I hope. But when I was younger, I could look at my early days as a lawyer, looking at these great guys, partners, and thinking, oh my God, these are the leaders. Wow, everything is so great about them. And this is also how we behave, and then behaving back. This is when the person says, oh, that's my pet lawyer, right? And being very careful about these relationships. So this is what we look for, right? In when we coach as a psychodynamic coach. So I've given you a very rapid 1 hour for something that I have to observe people write for 18 months. So what we will do now, because it's 9:55, 5 minutes, it's still life. Think about what we've spoken and feel free to make mistakes. This is psychologically safe. And it's a real case that I've worked with. And I think more than once it came up. You're working as a coach with a team that has been described as a quiet, conventional, hesitant to innovate. Post-COVID, the organization has restructured the way it works in a bid to have flatter hierarchies, and also new players have arrived in the market. Competition is tougher, right? As you observe them in a meeting, you notice that few people intervene and then tend to focus on their own documents, the papers in front of them. Don't we see that when we go to meetings? It's not because people are late. They keep shuffling at their papers and not looking at each other. This is very telling. Behavior is communication. All behavior is communication, right? And they tend to focus, they show interest whenever there are slides, and research as what is trending, data, give us the data. Please don't speak about emotions. The leader is one driving the meeting. People tend to speak only when asked questions, and you start feeling anxious as you observe them. And I'm sure a few of you have felt that. I have felt that. What are the different things here that you would like to explore in your mind?
I would explore trust.
Yes. Using psychodynamics, what we've spoken about, as basic assumptions, even if you think about the basic assumption. So, yes, I think you're right, Nahum. Trust is the basis, but trust and psychological safety is directly related also to these. Is it a work group here? Would that represent a work group or a basic assumption group? If that was several meetings. Work group is where everything's going well. Basic assumption group by Wilfred Bion is when people are behaving in a way that either they are listening to someone. So think about it. What's jumping out at you?
I think there's a lot of... Oh.
Yeah, please, Julia.
So there seems to be fear in the space and people wanting to play safe. So there's some foundational pieces missing.
Yeah. So here when we would look at this, I would say, especially through several meetings, because it was post restructuring, it's not that group. It wasn't a work group. It was a basic assumption group. So it was, how do I raise it to the surface? And as a psychodynamic coach, part of my work is also to take risks, because sometimes you also become scapegoat, right? So what we do is you describe the quiet, the conventional, the hesitant to innovate. And you're right, Julia, hesitancy to innovate is a big red flag. It's people, risk-taking is very low, right? Conventional and hesitant to innovate. It's restructured in a bid to have flatter hierarchies, and the new players have arrived in the market. So there's also disturbances in the outer environment, and competition is getting tougher. And of course, that's going to play on the leader's role and the results he has to bring. You also, what do people do when they're actually focusing on their documents? What kind of defense mechanism could that be? Individuals and looking at,
you know, the dissociation,
avoided, Great. So they are trying not to look at it. And what would be looking at slides amount to?
Yeah, I mean, distraction, dissociation, so they don't have to feel the feeling, avoidance. Yeah.
Exactly. And putting on the slides the quality of being right, of being perfect, or here is the solution, the slides, right? Instead of us discussing. Could also be the leader is the one driving the meeting, and people are asked only when asked questions, so there's also a hesitation to take risks. Right? So what about the anxiety of the coach? I'm feeling anxious. What are the questions I would ask myself about my own anxiety?
Possibly.
Unmute yourselves, please, if you want to speak. Thank you.
Possibly. Do I have the courage to address this?
Yes. Yes. That's the first one. Am I fearful as a coach? Thank you, Terry. Yeah. Go to yourself. And then you say, if I'm not fearful as a coach, what is driving this anxiety? What could be driving? Could it be? Because when we work as a psychodynamic coach, there's no certainty. It's hypothesis. That could it be the transference? Could it be the anxiety? And now I shouldn't respond. Counter transference by being anxious, right? And responding as an anxious coach. Now is what is needed from me as a coach. And we see that when people focus on PowerPoints, focus on data instead of people, what do you think? Do you trust the data? Where have you seen this before? Because at the end of the day, the work group that succeeds is the work group that communicates. Because here, the only reason a team exists is because the organization deemed that the work couldn't be done by one person, right? And here, that team cohesion, that team intelligence, is not being harnessed. And if you think of it, they're all looking up to the leader. So it could also be basic assumption dependency, right? Then we start asking the question, what did we observe? So how did you feel? I noticed this. What do you think? So what's this experience in others? Because we also do not want to generalize on context.
Lola, so, you're probably paying attention to the time too. We have to close now.
Yeah. Finished. Just on time. Was looking, I hope you found, I hope you can give me some feedback and let me know, I mean, how did you find this introduction?
For me, absolutely an introduction. There is so much more behind this. So
it was an introduction
to curiosity to what's next, what more do I need to know?
Absolutely.
It's like it's not enough, you know, it's the temptation to hear more and listen for more, you know, so thank you for that.
Thank you so much, Dahlia, really, thank you. And what I encourage everyone to know is to read a little bit more about psychodynamics. It's completely grounded in research and in evidence-based, and it is supported by neuroscience. Please read on psychodynamic theory and start with the individual. It really helps even in self-understanding.
Thank you very, very much for this profound, stimulating, confusing field that has been on the side and never gotten in. And it sounds like it has a lot of value, even individuals, not just teams and organizations. It's,
well,
there is a lot of message on the chat and a lot of great
thank you very much.
And I heard you in many spaces, and every time it's different things. You are so interesting and inspiring. Thank you so much, Lola.
Thank you, Hotel. That's really, really.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Would you be okay if I took a picture, or you would rather not have a picture? I'm fine with it. Yeah, would you be okay? Anybody who's not okay, just close. Because, and if you feel like being on LinkedIn with me connected, I'm always happy to discuss with peer coaches. And I am so grateful to Terry. I look at up to her as my mentor. Whenever I have an issue, I speak to Terry. It's always wonderful to have her. And today was just a pleasure. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much, Lola.
Thank you.
And okay. If you want, Lola, if you want, you can stay with us to celebrate.
Yay! Terry's birthday tomorrow. Happy birthday to you. Dear Terry, happy birthday to you.
Oh, wait, let me turn the recording off.
Yeah.